When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Inside Syracuse Basketball with Mike Waters, presented by Syracuse.com.
College basketball is a great thing. Anything can happen.
Welcome to the Inside Syracuse Basketball Podcast. I'm Mike Waters. Today on the podcast, I'm joined by former Syracuse basketball player Matt Rowe. Matt and I had an incredible conversation on a variety of topics, including what Georgetown coach John Thompson yelled at him after making 4 3-pointers, what John Thompson told Matt was his favorite SU Georgetown memory, why Matt transferred from Syracuse, and why he came back to his hometown years later, and going to see the Batman movie with the late Hank Gathers. I had always thought that I was going to get Matt Rowe on the podcast at some time, but I didn't really plan on having him this week. But after our previous guest, Stevie Thompson, was on, and in that podcast, Stevie starts talking about a play that took place in a Syracuse game in 1988 against Indiana at Madison Square Garden. And Syracuse fans will remember it as the famous Sherman Douglas football hike pass, where Sherman hiked the ball almost half the length of the court to Stevie Thompson, who was streaking to the basket and dunked it. And Stevie noted that there was another Syracuse player on the other side, filling the lane on the opposite side of the court from him, who was also out there on the fast break. And it was none other than this guest, Matt Rowe. Matt, how are you, sir?
Mike, great introduction. I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. But it was funny. After that podcast aired, I get a text from you.
Yeah.
Because as Stevie pointed out, you're on the break too. And actually, he admitted you were slightly ahead of him.
It was amazing.
He was never throwing you the ball.
No, it was, first off, it was an amazing podcast. I was totally into it. As I told you before the show, I learned a lot about Stevie, and he's probably one of my teammates I was closest with the 3 years I was at Syracuse. But interesting story, as that was playing, you know, Stevie had mentioned previously I played with 7 or 8 NBA players when I was at Syracuse. I played with 7 of them as well, him being one of them. But as he's telling the story, I'm like, he's got to mention my name here. And I'm like, I was ahead of him. He should have passed me the ball. I've thought that for 30 years. The interesting thing about it, looking at it, and even as I text you and watch the end of the podcast and then pulled it up on YouTube to watch it just to make sure, I was a full step ahead of him with my arm, right arm out, leading it. It's interesting. As we all grow up, you know, our parents always teach us in basketball, you know, play the right way, you know, but it gets to a certain point when you get started being recruited as an athlete, you have a little selfishness in you. And my dad always instilled in me, hey, you know, it's probably better for you to shoot if one person's on you, if you're double teamed. But if someone's wide open on the basket, give it to them. But if someone's ahead of you on a fast break, obviously give it to them. But after watching it a couple more times, I really don't blame Stevie. And here's why. Number one, I wouldn't have dunked it like him. I know that. Everyone always asked me, could you dunk? I was 6'5". I could dunk easily. I could tomahawk it. I could reverse it. I've dunked in games. I've dunked on players. But I wasn't a high wire act like Stevie. Most unbelievable athlete I ever played with. But if you really look at the essence of that pass by Sherman Douglas, the high pass, phenomenal. It's why it gets all the YouTube clicks, the hits. It's on every video. But really, if you put yourself in Sherman's shoes and Stevie, who I know had blinders on as that ball's in the air and he was going to dunk it, why give Sherman a hockey assist, right? I mean, he's got to be the real, like, if you're Stevie thinking, if this pass is coming my way, I'm going to be the one to finish it. How bad would it look from Stevie to catch, say, oh, here you go, Matt. And then he's not going to be part of history. I get it. Trust me. But at the time, I still thought he should have passed him. In the game, I'm like, and if you watch me, I knew after one step and he took a dribble, I just said, I'm getting back on defense. I'm not going to beat him there. So it's a fun play, but I really don't blame him. But at the time, I really want him to pass me the ball.
And for anybody listening to the podcast who hasn't seen that play, and I'm assuming 99% of those listeners have, but just it's on YouTube. Just type in Sherman Douglas football hike. It's going to come up. The clip is there. And yes, clear as day, Matt Rowe is filling the right lane. On the opposite side of the court is Stevie. And I remember you putting your arm up.
Yeah.
Which was the most hysterical thing I've ever seen.
Running very hard too, thinking is it balls in the air, I'm gonna get this. And what's crazy about it is, you know, you watch all these dunk videos that people put on YouTube about Syracuse. And listen, we had high wire acts. We had, you know, the guy who backed me up, David Johnson, you know, could put his head on the rim. Stevie Thompson, Derek Coleman, Ronnie Cycli, and Sherm was a catalyst of all those assists. And it's funny, out of all those highlights you see, I may have had one on a fast break, but I'm in none of those highlights in Syracuse dunks. I mean, zero of them. With the guys I play with, I don't blame it. Again, on Stevie, I don't blame him on this. But what talent we had back then.
Oh, my God. What was it like to play with a bunch of guys? And you said, like, you played with seven or eight future NBA guys. But not only were you playing with great players, you were playing with some personalities, like Derek Coleman, Sherman, Ronnie Cycli, even the guys who weren't, like, the names we know. Those teams from 1987 to 1989, 90 in there, I mean, you played with some strong personalities is the way I'll put it.
Well, it's interesting. I think what started it all, Mike, is right before you got here, I believe in 89, is, you know, Pearl Washington commits to Syracuse. And, you know, back then, guys, before they made a minimum age go to the NBA, probably would have gone straight to the NBA. It was on a radio show that he committed. McDonald's All-American, one of the top five players in the country. So I think that started all of the, you know, the hysteria for basketball in this area. But when I was a high school athlete going up there to play pickup ball at Manly, I mean, you think about it, Pearl declared for the draft and Sherman backed him up his freshman year. You had Michael Brown, who was a McDonald's All-American who transferred to Clemson. And you had Rodney Walker, who was a McDonald's All-American who really got beat out by Derek Coleman, who was in my class in 86, 87. And we had technically two McDonald's All-Americans in our class, Derek Coleman and Stevie Thompson. And then Earl Duncan, who was a first victim casualty of Prop 48, was one of those borderline McDonald's guys. You know, he was what would have been in the Jordan Classics today. So we had three guys in the top, you know, 30, and then you throw in Keith Hughes in our class. We ended up, Earl and Keith transferred to Rutgers. They were all top 50 guys. I was the only guy out of the top 50 in that recruiting class, and Eric Rogers had redshirted. So there was just, you know, there's so many interesting guys on our team. I mean, the guy who kept us all laughing all the time was Derek Brower. You had, you know, Herman Hareed. Cycli was just, you know, that run we had our freshman year to the national championship game and losing Indiana. I mean, those road trips, we played the first two at the Dome, and then we go to East Rutherford, New Jersey, and just in the hotel and watching ESPN and having Ronnie run around the hotel saying he wasn't getting respect from Dick Vitale. And, you know, we just make this magical run. But the guys who were kind of just our rock in that whole scenario was our captains, Greg Monroe and Howie Trishan. They don't get enough, you know, accolades for that run. I mean, those guys were selfless. They were great role players. They kept the glue together. You know, no one had heard of Sherman Douglas, really. Everyone thought Pearl was coming back for senior, and he's a third team All-American that year, taking us all the way to the championship game out of nowhere, really. So it was just, it was a fun group. There was never a dull moment. Practices were very tough. I try to tell my kids, and, you know, when I coached at Fairfield, you know, freshman year is hard. I mean, I was like the 11th, 12th man. I fought, you know, scratch and claw just to get into a practice, just to get in the top five on the second team in practice. We had great walk-ons, Joel Katz, Joey Combe. These guys were unbelievable. So you looked at that team as, you know, 1 through 15. It wasn't just Ronnie or Derek as a freshman with a rebound record. I mean, our whole team was a battle every day, and great guys, and we enjoyed being with each other. And the great thing was there was no ego at that time. You know, there was no, you know, the ball was shared, guys played hard, and those years were great. It laid the foundation of my 3 years at Syracuse. It's just, you know, you got to come every day and practice and earn your spot. There's no days off.
You know, looking back on your career at Syracuse, you played in the wrong era. I mean, your junior year, you made 47% of your three-point shots. That is still the single season record at Syracuse for highest three-point percentage. And by the way, you took 175 threes. That sounds like a lot. It's really not.
No,
it's not about today. It's about 4.5 attempts per game.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me throw something. By the way, you were fifth on the team in field goal attempts. The Derek and Stevie and Sherman and those guys apparently did not value your shooting ability enough.
Well, the threes wasn't that big. I know you're going to give me more stats. Threes were not big then. But again, we can get into it later of why I transferred. But I'm a fifth option on that team. Think about it. So sophomore year, I got Cycli, Coleman, Stevie Thompson, Sherman, myself, and then take out Cycli and put in Billy Owens, who's the freshman year. And I get in this argument with Billy, and you'll probably have the stats. Billy only averaged 1 or 2 points a game more than me his freshman year, and I was a junior. I think he averaged 13. I may have averaged 11, maybe. But he says, no way I outscored you by a lot. I think it was he, you know, I used to see him at the Big East. I'm like, Billy, I outscored you your freshman year. He's like, no way. And he's right. I think he outscored me by two. One or two, Mike, could be. But he was only like 13 a game as a freshman.
Okay, Matt Rowe is right, ladies and gentlemen. Billy Owens as a freshman averaged 13 a game, and Matt averaged 11.
There you go. Think about that.
Well, think about this. You averaged 11 points a game, and you were making 47% of your threes.
Again, fifth option, okay? And talking about the wrong era, Patino just brought it in with Providence. You know, Delray Brooks, Billy the Kid. And that's – we met him my freshman year in the Final Four. That's where the three started to become something that, hey, coaches want to use it. But look, at the three-point line came in my freshman year, and Greg Monroe edged me out, I think, as a career three-point shooting field goal. He's like half a percent maybe of that, but he only had one season with it, probably only took less than 100, I would think.
And I less had less than 100, yes.
And I had 3 years there. But again, I didn't play my freshman year. I mean, I played 13 games my freshman year. Looking back, and I know Coach Pan with Christians probably should have redshirted, probably. But, you know, back then you don't know. You just go and you're, you know, 17-year-old freshman. You want to play, you're part of it, and you don't know how good those guys are. They're men. You know, I ask kids this all the time. You get mad as a freshman coming into college and you're not playing. Did you start on varsity as a freshman? I had the same conversation with my son. My son made varsity at FM as a freshman and probably only played a quarter and a half. I was on the JV team as a freshman, and I didn't start until my sophomore year. He was one of the better players as your sophomore, but it's tough. They're 3 years older than you. They're you know, men to boys.
Yeah. All right. So I want to have a little fun before we go on, because I can't let go of this 3-point thing.
Yeah. Trust me.
All right.
I'm with you.
I'm gonna make Matt Rowe mad, everybody. All right. So you took on average 4.5. three-pointers a game as a junior, 4.5. This SU player took 8 three-pointers a game while making only 38% of them. And he also led his team in scoring at 17.8 points per game, leading the team in not only three-point attempts, but field goal attempts. Name that Syracuse player.
I should have the last name because I would have played more. Buddy Boeheim.
Very good.
Thank you. At first, I thought it was going to be GMAC, but then I thought 38%. And look at Buddy. You know,
you Buddy's don't want to know GMAC's numbers.
Yeah, well, Buddy, that's a lot of volume. But listen, comparison, and I'm not – look at Buddy Boeheim, hell of a player, great IQ, coach's son, phenomenal. Look, he started his freshman year, I believe he was 2 for 31. Somewhere in that realm, really struggled, got the second, third, fourth opportunity, which is important. And again, he played a lot more than my freshman year, but probably much better with the ball, creating shots. I learned that in Europe. I was a one-trick pony in college. I could shoot. coach tried to get me into more of the shot fake, one dribble, draw contact like Chris Mullin on the baseline. And I think that came more in Europe. I had to learn how to dribble. And I give a lot of that credit to Mike Hopkins, actually. When I left Maryland, came back, I'd work out a lot with Hop in Manly Fieldhouse when he got into his coaching. So when I was in Europe playing 7 years, I really developed a better ball handling skills with a lot of his drills that he did with cones and chairs, and it helped me tremendously. And it's funny because Hop actually lived on my couch for a season before he got into coaching when he was playing over in Holland, and he got cut by the team and he practiced with my team, and then he came and coached. He was the GA, I guess, in Syracuse. So
he lived on your couch?
Lived on my couch for about a month. Yeah.
In Holland?
No, I was in France. He had been cut in Holland by his team, and then he got another tryout. But when I was in Besançon, France, I had a coach who had passed away, Charlie Offrey. He was an American guy from Long Island, married a French woman, real nice guy. He used to let, you know, other players come and work out with us because you only have 7 or 8 pros, and you have what's called esquires. They're young guys that go to school. We practice twice a day, so at night you'd have maybe 12 guys. During the day, we'd maybe only have 7 or 8. Hop at the time for about a month worked out with our team trying to stay in shape to play in Holland and lived on my couch. Interesting. This is probably back in, 93, 94, somewhere in there. Before that. 93, 94, somewhere in there. Crazy times. So anyways, back to Buddy. I mean, he's shooting in a much longer distance than I am. He's now the last year, you know, this year is going to be the focal point of the offense, but teams are dogging him. I mean, that 38%, I mean, whether he's coming off COVID or not, he struggled early in the year. He was down in the 20s, you know, high 20s, and got it up. So, you know, 33% to me is my number. I tell everyone's respectable because it's 50% from twos, 33.3, 50 from twos. So he got respectable late in the year. He got caught fire during the NCAA tournament, but look at, he's the first, second guy in the scouting report. I was the 4th, 5th, or 6th, right? Difference. So they're hot on him from the jump. And, he's got more of, more off the ball skills than I did at that age. But a gym rat, and that's what it takes, you know? And again, he's got a shot at the NBA. You know, I wish times were changing, which you're probably going with this. If I could, you know, could have had more shots, more emphasis on the three, you have a shot at playing in the league, because today it's the 3 and D guys and it's the guys that can spread the court if you get in the right team. You know, I thought Andy Routins by now really probably would have had a 7 or 8 or 9 year NBA career. It's just catching on with the right team. He gets on with the Knicks and it's not the right team for him. And then guys get on that 1 foot in the boat, 1 on the dock. Do I want to make money, play in Europe, or do I want to keep getting cut and play in the G League? And, you know, G League and CBA that I played in is not a lot of money. You're living paycheck to paycheck.
Sure. Now, in the course of this conversation here, you mentioned that you transferred from Syracuse.
Yeah.
You had only 1 year of eligibility left, and you transferred to Maryland because you wanted to do more than just be, penciled in only as a shooter. You wanted to do more. Looking back on it, is that still the right move for you?
Oh, wow. I think there's a show out there now. I could be wrong on the name. It's like Ordinary Joe. I'm laughing at it. It's a guy that has forks in the road and he can choose different, you know, he could have been a doctor, could have been a teacher, could have been a rock star or something like that. You know, it was a big fork in the road for me. I contemplated leaving after my sophomore year, didn't have the right situation, went back. It was a tough year. When you're playing with greats like a Billy Owens, a Derek Sherman, Stevie, a lot of the things that go on the court, right, wrong. I heard, you know, on Stevie's podcast, Stevie never got yelled at. And Stevie, right, wrong, or different, was a 3-5 student, did everything right. A gym rat like myself. Didn't make a lot of mistakes. You know, our best defender, we would swap off. I'm a 2, he's a 3, but he would usually guard the 2. You know, I would guard a 3, depending on size. We didn't play a lot of zone back then. So Stevie was a great defender. Stevie could score. What a lot of people don't know about Stevie, he's a great shooter in practice. You witnessed it probably in 89. I mean, He could shoot 98 out of 100 free throws. Honest to God, he's probably a better shooter than me in practice. I was one of those guys that would shoot. The stats bear it out, 1-for-2 in practice from three, and I'd shoot 1-for-2 in a game. I mean, I was close to a 45 to 50% from three. And, you know, people want to say whether I was open or not. A lot of teams played zone. They play as man, and they're probably doubling down on Coleman and Sikley. So you do get looked, but a lot of them sometimes would be in transition. So I'd find the spot. But the transfer right thing, one regret is I think the team I would have come back to, Mike, and you get a lot of grief, I think, for writing about this, on transfers that affected Syracuse. I really believe we had a national championship team. Was I traded out, so to speak, you know, for LaRon Ellis? I mean, I don't know. Do we really need another big man on that team? That team needed a shooter. Times, I think they started Stevie at the one, tried to go big, didn't work out, started Michael Edwards, you know, moved David Johnson on a lineup. David didn't play a lot for that team at all. And he got a lot of my minutes my junior year with his athleticism, and he could score and transition. But, again, I think that team struggled from three. They lose to Minnesota. I don't know the exact stats, but, you know, Tony Scott had a lot of volume that game and not put it on one guy, but they couldn't make any threes. So I think that team has a chance to win it all. But going to Maryland, you know, a lot of people don't know the visits I went on. I went – my first visit was when I left Syracuse was to Northwestern, and Bill Foster was a coach. And the only reason I didn't go there was, number one, I looked at the business school, Kellogg Unbelievable Education. I could get a year, you know, maybe start grad school with a transfer. But Coach Foster told me that he wouldn't play me at the two. And I asked him why, and he told me he had a guy named Rex Walters. Okay, and I'm like, who's he? And he goes, he's one of our top recruits we've ever had. Well, Rex Walters was kind of a borderline McDonald's, ends up going to Kansas, is now a coach, did really well there, but transferred from Northwestern to Kansas. So at the three, I looked at myself in the Big Ten, guarding the likes of Glenn Rice, Nick Anderson. It really wasn't going to happen. So then I looked at my next visit was at Kentucky with Rick Pitino. He just got the job.
Oh, wow.
These are great, great stories. So Pitino gets the job, literally flies in probably the week before I came in for my visit. They're on probation. I knew Rick through Five Star. He came into the clinic. He asked Howard Garfinkel, who's the best shooter in the camp. Howard Garfinkel said, Matt Rowe. I did a clinic with him. He kind of recruited me a little bit. At Providence, maybe I had a good relationship with Coach Boeheim, and they never really did a home visit. Coach offered me on the last home visit possible, and I accepted, so it never really got to that point. But Pitino's sell to me was, I'll get you to the NBA with individual workouts. He kind of told me, I love Kentucky. I'm going to buy horses. I'm never going to move. Well, that didn't really work out that way. And I just, with probation, it wasn't really a viable option for me. They had a heck of a roster. They had a lot of great guys coming back. So I kind of hemmed and hawed. My third visit was to Loyola Marymount. My host was Hank Gathers.
Holy cow.
Yeah. Yeah. He took me to the movie Batman with his girlfriend. Great team. Bo Kimble, Fryer, Peabody. Just, you know, this is before they went crazy with the way they ran up the score. But the thing I didn't really like was the fact that it was across the country, a lot farther away from home than I wanted to be. And I just didn't have the right feeling there. It's farther away than I wanted to be.
And my You went to crazy. See Batman with Hank Gathers on a visit to Loyola Marymount.
And he passed away that year. It's the most tragic thing I had to watch the following year. It gives me chills talking about it.
If you were of a certain age back in those days and you know who Hank Gathers was and how good he was, and you remember, you know, watching him pass away, basically, that must have hit you incredibly hard.
Hard, very hard, very hard. And a super, you know, one of the leaders of that team, you know, just respected, heart, never, you know, when you watch him play pickup, he reminded me of a taller version of Sherman Douglas, as crazy as that sounds. Like, whenever you were on Sherman's team at Syracuse, whether it's 3-on-3, 4-on-4, half court, hated to lose, would inspire you to win, and just would gut and claw your eyes out to win that game. That's the way Sherman was. And then Hank had a lot of those same characteristics, kind of a silent leader. It's very weird. And amazing how that team responded with the run they made in the NCAA tournament, you know, after his loss. But just, yeah, tough one. My fourth visit was to Rutgers. You know, they were calling it, you know, Syracuse East, because Keith had already transferred there, and Earl, my roommate, was there at the time. So okay. That was my fourth visit. And here's the crazy thing, Mike. When I left to go visit schools, what was told to my father and I, it was, if you don't like any schools when you transfer, you are welcome back. So it got to the point after my fourth visit that I was honestly thinking of that fork in the road again of maybe coming back. Oh. But in my mind, I knew that I'm, you know, whether scoring's right, wrong, or indifferent, 10 a game, 11 a game is really not wowing people unless you make it all the way to the end and win it all. You're the fourth or fifth option, and I was going to be the fourth or fifth option coming back with that team. And, you know, guards usually back in that day were averaging 17 or 18, which was what I did at Maryland. But here's the thing. I'm looking at options, and all of a sudden Gary Williams gets hired from Ohio State to Maryland. And we reached out to them. They were very interested. I went down on a visit. Loved the visit. At the time, my sister Amber had just graduated from Maryland. So I knew the campus. I knew College Park. Knew all about Len Bias. Was told at the time, from what Maryland thought with their AD and Gary, that they were going to get a slap on the wrist from the NCAA. And they were going to pay back the $400,000 and $500,000 they had made from the NCAA tournament the prior year. And that was going to be it from the Bob Wade era, who replaced Lefty Drizel. And a lot of it had to do with the recruiting of Alonzo Mourning, improper gifts, some of the things with coaches driving players to class. There was a lot there of lack of institutional control. So as I'm down in Maryland, I'm getting interviewed by them, which I knew nothing about. And I'm also getting an interview by Bon Chenick and King on the Syracuse investigation in 89-90. So it was a tough time. And so Maryland gets whacked with, you know, almost a death penalty. I'm down there, and they get hit with 3 years, no TV live. They get hit with no ACC tournament for 3 years. They get hit with no NCAA tournament. And the crazy part about our team down there is I kind of picked a spot it was going to have an unbelievable team. My redshirt year down there, I'm practicing every day with Tony Massenberg. We played with the Spurs for 12 years. Gerard Mustaf is a sophomore who got drafted by the Knicks first round. He declares the year, my redshirt year, to go to the NBA. It was almost a lottery pick. And the one kid I never knew about that was strictly amazing, that when I went down there, reminded me of a combination between Derek Coleman and Billy Owens, was a guy named Walt Williams, the Wiz. I played in the backcourt with him. And the problem is how bad things got down there. He stays, and he keeps that program afloat. He's an amazing player. My senior year, after I redshirted 1991, we finished fifth, I believe, in the ACC and tie Virginia, beat them at home on senior day. They had Stith, Ryan Stith, and Crotty. And John Crotty and Ryan Stith, and we beat him to tie him. Our ACC was so strong that year, Mike, that Duke wins it all with Leitner, and Carolina is in the Final Four. And we beat every team in the ACC, you know, Wakehead, Anthony Tucker, Clemson had Dale Davis, Eldon Campbell. NC State had Chris Corciani and Rodney Monroe.
Pretty good backcourt.
Chris King was a guy at Wake. I mean, they're loaded at Wake. So we beat every team in ACC, and the only two teams we didn't beat that year were Duke and Carolina. They beat us both times at home. And we would have been in the NCAA tournament. It's a great team. But what people don't know about that team is Walt Williams breaks his leg 7 games into my senior last year there. And the hard part was, to go back to three-point percentages, I go from 47, I don't know what God's name, I shot like 34, 33, 35%, I think, my senior Maryland. I almost got thrust into playing a combo guard of point and shooting guard. We had a kid named Kevin McClinton, who was a sophomore who came in and filled in great with Walt, and we would kind of share the ball handling duty. So, again, I was getting more of my points off drives and pull-ups, and we pressed. Gary was a big guy on pressing full court. And, you know, I could only imagine, though, you know, Walt and I averaged 17 a game that year, of what we would have been if he could have played the whole year, because he was unstoppable. The next year he went through the ACC and averaged almost 30 a game in ACC play. Most talented player I've been around on a daily basis. It could just do a lot of things. And, you know, he had a 10, 11 year career in the NBA.
Yeah. You know, talking about the transfer to Maryland brings me to another subject I wanted to get to you here. You know, it's in, I think it's 2008, and you've moved back to the area here, and Syracuse is looking for a color analyst for their radio broadcasts for the basketball games. And here's a guy like yourself who transferred. You didn't finish your career here.
Yeah.
And yet you get that job. And I always wondered, you know, what Jim Boeheim said about that. Did he have any role to play in whether you did or didn't get that job? Because a lot of coaches could have harbored a lot of resentment or bitterness to a kid that left.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think he did. I don't know for sure. I know I was first asked by Matt Park to fill in a game. At the time, I think that they were rotating through some former players, like Jeannie Waldron, I think, was doing it for a while. Shawnee Cairns was doing it for a while, too. They were splitting it up. And I think my first year, we kind of rotated. I only did a couple exhibition games and worked with Matt. And at the time, you know, the company's IMG, so I'm sure the higher-ups had to okay it. But look, at one point, it had to be asked of Coach Boeheim, do you want this? Do you approve of it? And I'm sure, you know, that's a tough one. That's a tough call on him. I never really thought, Mike, when I transferred, I knew I closed the door when I went down to College Park. I thought I'd never, ever, 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 ever be back in Syracuse. And I've lived here since, you know, almost 18 years, since 2003, and moved back. And I did it really when I got out of coaching in Fairfield to raise kids. You know, I knew it was a safe place. I knew it's a great cost of living. I didn't really realize the lack of sun. You know, you don't when you live here and you move back. And my wife constantly reminds me that she's from Boston, that we don't see the sun here much from November to May. But it was tough. I'm sure Coach had to approve it at some level. It was a weird dynamic coming back because I, you know, some people when I meet with them is, now I'm a State Farm agent, last 16 years, or, you know, they'll ask, they don't know I transferred. They'll ask, why did you transfer? Why did you move back? And I really never thought I would be back here, but a lot of kudos to him, I'm sure, at some point. The really weird thing for me, Mike, is I got to play in a Legends game at Syracuse, which is really weird, for former alums at the Dome. I don't know if you remember that. And Carmelo was back, didn't play. It was just really weird putting on the number 3 jersey, or it was a T-shirt at the time, with Syracuse on it, playing at the Dome. You know, I hadn't done it since 1989. So that was really weird. And I actually saw, you know, running into Coach during doing the radio, doing the color, I, you know, have to interview him at halftime. So that, you know, that kind of tension, I guess, was over and things were forgiven. I think that, you know, that game, the Legends game, I went up to the locker room. I said, you know, I really thank you for allowing me to play in this. You know, it was kind of emotional for me. And he just said, you know, not a problem. It wasn't a big deal for him. So it takes a lot for him to accept that and, you know, want to help out a former player. And again, I think people have this conception of doing the radio as a job. It wasn't, you know, for me, I'm a perfectionist. I want to do well for Matt Park and put out a good production, but it really wasn't, you know, a hustle, a side hustle job. I mean, I was doing well as a State Farm agent. You have to declare outside interest at State Farm if you're on the board or doing those things. So, you know, wasn't making a lot of money doing it, right? It was a fun thing. It was kind of a hobby for me. Mm-hmm. And the weird thing, people ask me, why did it end? And here's another interesting story is that when the last year I did it, you're going to know better than me. It was probably, if I had to guess, it was probably 2000. What was the year they went to the Final Four and lost to Michigan?
Your last year on the air was 2013 when they went to the Final Four.
I knew you knew it. So 2013, 8 years ago. So I'm going to put my son at 8 years old. He's 16, turning 17 next month. So it's the last year of the Big East, okay? And it's ask me my story about John Thompson, which I'll tell you too if you want. But I interviewed John Thompson at Madison Square Garden, probably one of the funnest interviews I've ever done. They did the 30 and 30 for it. So we're playing Georgetown. We lose to Louisville in the final game, Patino, coming full circle with Patino. And we're away for a full 8 days. You know, you fly with a team, as you know, come back with them. I come home for 2 days, pack a bag, and head out to San Jose.
Right.
We're out there. We win two games, fly home, pack a bag. We go down to Washington, D.C. So going back to the D.C. area that I love. And we beat Marquette in Indiana, Sweet 16, Elite Eight. Come home for a day. Pack my bags, head down to Atlanta, Final Four. You're down there a day, you know, 3 or 4 days early.
Yes.
We play on Saturday, lose to Michigan. And as you know, Louisville wins it all, and they should have lost to Wichita State, right? Wichita
right.
State had them in the semis.
Yes.
So Michigan losing the finals. We lose in the Final Four on a Saturday. I pick up my phone on Saturday. My wife sends me a video of my son, Trevor, playing at the Y. He's 8 years old. And I'm watching the video on my phone. And I'm like, this is the last time I'm going to watch him on video. I want to watch my daughter, Lexi, and his games live. I can't do this. And it brought me back to coaching at Fairfield. I was not married at the time, but there's people don't realize these coaches and the sacrifice that the Alan Griffins and the Red Autrys and the Jerry McNamara's and the Coach Boeheim's of what they go through on a yearly basis. They think that they're not playing. It's offseason. They're dealing with camps. They're dealing with recruiting. They're out on the road. It's a nonstop calendar year. And when I was doing the radio and working at State Farm, you know, there was no downtime. And I'm watching my kids on video. And I'm like, this is the reason that I got out of coaching is to watch them. So that was the last game. And Joe Baldini was our boss at the time at IMG. And I had a lunch with him at Drummond's and just listen, probably a month after the season, this is it. It's funny because he came to me saying, you guys are doing great. We're going to give you a raise. And I'm like, Joe. I'm done. And, you know, I knew Jim Saddle and knew he did a lot of commentating and kind of suggested Jim and the rest is history. But, you know, I don't know if I ever get back into it. You know, I have 2 years left with my son at FM and my daughter just started at Niagara and I'm going to try to catch as many games as I can with them and continue to do that. But bittersweet, loved being involved with it. Loved that Coach Boeheim kind of, you know, accepted me back into the fold. It was great times, great, you know, 6 or 7 year run, but it was time to move on from it.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. You mentioned your kids there and, you know, you stopped the radio gig so you could be around them and watch them play, maybe coach them a little bit. Lexi is going to be a freshman at Niagara this year on the basketball team there. Good for her.
Yeah.
And then Trevor, you mentioned him going into his junior year at FM. I hear he's what, 6'8" now?
Yeah, he's 6'8". You know, he's starting to buy in the last 2 or 3 years really into – he's seen what Lexi's done with her talent and her work ethic. And, you know, Lexi's a grinder. You know, she's a gym rat. She loves to compete. She's got a motor. You know, is always in great shape. And, you know –
just looking, like her mom.
They, that's what they get from their mom. They get that endurance gene. No doubt.
For the listeners that don't know, Matt's wife, Kristen, is or was, I'm not sure if he's still doing it or not, but an incredible triathlete, and she's done Ironman competitions and basically kicks Matt's butt whenever they go for a run together, right?
You're right. No, it's a great, it's the absolute truth. The funny thing about my wife, though, that I will say is we grew up in my household. SSR is very competitive. You know, hand-eye sports, a lot of tennis, ping pong, obviously football, baseball, basketball. Tennis was my first love, but we always grew up with a ping pong table in our basement, got very competitive. And my wife is a phenomenal, you know, hiker, iron woman, iron man, runs ultra marathons, 100 miles, 50 miles, amazing stuff. And he's actually got out of that triathlon things and got more into hiking, now getting back more into the triathlons again to do Lake Placid next year, I think. But if you threw a ball at my wife, there's probably a 50% chance she may or may not catch it, may bruise her in the face. Love her to death, but not a hand-eye. She wants to get into tennis now, but not hand-eye where, you know, I think my kids get the endurance from her, but more the hand-eye things from me. I'm just going to say that. So we'll put that on the record. But so Lexi's more the grinder, endurance, and Trevor is starting to catch on to that. I mean, I think he's going to have a breakout year this summer. He plays for the Albany City Rocks with Jim Hart. He's, you know, 6'8". He's looking forward to this season and a very hard worker and kind of driven. I think he's a year ahead of where I was at that age. Just because of the height, I think he's more of a scorer. And you saying the game's changed more to threes, I think any college team that gets him will be blessed because, you know, good kid, good student, and a really hard worker.
All right. We're getting near the end of the podcast.
Yeah.
You got to take us home with a John Thompson story or two.
I love it. So year I left Cuse, 89. I asked John Thompson my last question. Meanwhile, I'll preface this a little bit, say my only, and maybe this is why Stevie didn't pass me on that fast break hike, my only Chevrolet player of the game I ever got was at Georgetown at the Cap Center. It's all we lived for as college athletes. You know, they put it up on CBS. You know, we all wore those CBS hats, CBS banners. You knew covering Syracuse as the beat writer, you knew when CBS was in the dome, right? I mean, it was just a different atmosphere. We were always on ESPN. CBS was nationwide, or we thought during a Saturday, Sunday. So I get a Chevy player of the game at Georgetown. We did lose that game. I think Stevie was upset because in the first half, I score four threes, and the last one was right in front of John Thompson on the bench. He's got the towel draped over him. And he yells at his team, and I can't use it because there's a lot of swear words in there, that basically this guy doesn't score again for the rest of the blanking game, and calls a timeout right in front of me. And I didn't score the rest of the game. I missed a few. But with Mark Tillman and Mark Bryant, I didn't get much breathing room in the second half. And Stevie, kind of at the end of the game, you know how he gets his late buckets and, you know, he probably had 15, 16 points, who knows. He's a scoring machine. That's what he did. And he gets on the bus, and I think he got a call from his mom that said, you didn't get the Chevy player of the game. Matt Rowe did. Maybe that's why I didn't get the pass on the hike pass, because he probably deserved the Chevy player over me. So that's my only really, you know, one-on-one exchange with John Thompson. You know, he's a fiery guy. Grew up in Syracuse, going to Manly Fieldhouse. Seeing Georgetown was a crappy team back then, beat Syracuse, and John Thompson grabs the microphone, as we all know, and says, Manly Fieldhouse is officially closed. So I go to John Thompson with a microphone before the last game they played him at Madison Square Garden, semifinals of the Big East tournament. I go to John and say, can I interview you? Sure. He's great. Gives me like 5-10 minutes.
So this is probably in 2013.
2013.
Your last year on the air. Okay.
Correct. Okay. So my last question to John Thompson, and I'm thinking, I am asking the question, John, I didn't call him John, coach, what is your best favorite moment of the rivalry of Syracuse-Georgetown? And I'm thinking he's going to, it's an easy lob ball question, right? If he's going to talk about closing down Manly Fieldhouse. And he doesn't go with that, Mike. He says that the game at the Dome in 1989, I believe, you know better than me, 1989, maybe 90, it was a calendar year in past January, they're playing at the Dome. And he gets booted out, correct, with a double technical. Three T's.
Three.
Okay, so this is his favorite Syracuse moment, okay? So he's closed manly. He's, you know, he's had an orange thrown at the backboard when Patrick Ewing played and took his team off the floor. He's had to have Boeheim get on the microphone and say, no swearing. Let's not throw anything. I've seen it all. We've seen all the rivalry. We knew we were playing Georgetown. Coach Bam would make us play the starters 5-7. You knew you were coming against someone's going to grab and tug and beat the crap out of you, right? So his favorite moment, he gets three T's. He's sitting back in the Georgetown visiting locker room, and you've been in those locker rooms that are absolutely god-awful compared to what we get treated home at Syracuse versus the football visiting locker room. It's just, you know, aluminum and, you know, just lockers and a couple stalls and showers. It's very tight. So he's sitting back there, and he's watching the game on a live feed, and he's just – and they're winning the whole way. And all he wants to do is have Georgetown win. That's all he wants to do. And then he tells a story of Sam Jefferson, correct? Yes. Sam Jefferson fouling Billy Owens at half court. And did Billy – how many free throws did Billy shoot to put it in overtime? Four?
I think it was a 1-1, and he had to make them both.
Made them both. So he's watching this game slowly deteriorate. And all he's hoping for, Mike, is a win. That's all he wants is a win. And I said, why? And he goes, because I'm coming out after the game, and I want to go to midcourt and wave goodbye to all the fans and say goodbye and blow kisses. And he said it never got to happen. And he goes, that's my biggest regret, but it's my favorite moment, but it's the worst watching this game slowly deteriorate and lose it in overtime to Syracuse. It's unbelievable.
That's amazing. I can see Big John coming back out of the tunnel.
That's all he wanted.
To bask.
He said not the tunnel, but Mike. He said he was going to half court. Wait. Goodbye to everybody. Couldn't do it. That's great.
That's great. Awesome. That's great stuff. Matt, listen. I knew this was gonna be fun. The moment you texted me after listening to Stevie's podcast with so I thank you so much for reaching out and then joining us here today.
Mike, I want to thank you. And I know you're humble and you always laugh when I do this, but I come up a lot of times at Newhouse to speak to your class. You always ask great questions. You are the pro of pros. I love watching your podcast. I love, you know, Mike's mailbox. I love reading your stuff. Some people think because you rate me as the most valuable transfer out of Syracuse, I'm with you. My father's with you too. But no, you're the consummate pro. You are fair. You ask the right questions. You are not fearful of sometimes getting yelled at. I've been at your press conferences. I know it happens, but you always report the facts and you always do your research, and you are the consummate pros. Syracuse is lucky to have you for, what is it, 30, 31, 32 years now here, right?
It doesn't matter. I'm cutting
32, off. 32. You're amazing. And maybe it's your Midwestern background, but you are an amazing person and amazing at your job. And I thank you.
Well, listen, I appreciate it. And it's always been great talking to you from the first time I probably interviewed you when you were an undergrad at Syracuse until all the way through now. And we probably have so much more in common now as dads and kids and stuff like that. So again, I thank you so much for coming on here and
telling some
awesome stories.
Appreciate it.
All right, Matt. Be good.
Thank you.
I want to thank Matt for joining me on the podcast today. And thanks to you out there as well for listening in. Please subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcast and follow all of our complete coverage of Syracuse basketball on Syracuse.com. Until next time on the Inside Syracuse Basketball Podcast, I'm Mike Waters.